A pleasant good afternoon to you on this Monday as we begin another week in between week 7 and week 8 now of the college football season. We are halfway through with the season at this point, and it's hard to believe we're already there. A lot of games happened this past weekend, some upsets, and 5th-ranked Stanford was the most notable of those. They went down at the hands of Utah 27-21. That gives the Cardinal their first loss of the year, but it also was the first top 10 team to fall to an unranked opponent. They weren't the only victims, though. Texas stunned Oklahoma in the college football world with a one-sided 36-20 win in Dallas. And Missouri caused a shakeup at the top of the SEC East by beating Georgia 41-26. Missouri is now 6-0 on the year, 2-0 in Southeastern Conference play. And James Franklin for the Missouri Tigers, the quarterback, will be out for 3 to 5 weeks, so their status as front runner is probably in jeopardy. But several big developments this weekend. And one other thing that happened that I found interesting, seems like all Saturday we heard a debate about whether the Pac-12 was better than the SEC. As we know, the SEC has been the most dominant league in college football the last 7 years. Nobody disputes that. The SEC has 7 straight BCS championships. But ESPN's College Game Day led it off with a discussion as they broadcasted live from Washington in the Washington and Oregon game about whether that league was better. But Sears, and I'll bring in David Sears now, who's with me on Mondays, as he's been on the Bun Sports Show for years with us analyzing college football. Sears, it seemed to me that their argument took a major hit when Stanford and Utah went final 27-21.
I think that it did take some hit with that. Stanford was supposed to be one of the most dominant teams in college football. They were supposed to give a legitimate chance to the Pac-12 to make it as a BCS contender, but they just went on the road. It was a multiple factors going against a very difficult Washington team the week before, and then having to go on the road to Utah, which is a very altitude-esque type game there in Salt Lake, and then, of course, they also had to deal with a team that's very motivated right now. Utah is a very good team in the Pac-12 South. I don't necessarily think they'll be able to knock off UCLA, but Stanford just did not live up to the hype. They were not able to make plays when they needed to. They just looked very tired and lackadaisical. When they went up 14-7, kind of looked like they were going to pull away, and Utah came back to fight them. I would have liked to have actually watched more of the game, but they don't have the Pac-12 network here in Alabama, apparently, because it's not important enough for this area of the country.
Yeah, that's a big problem. They're going to have to get fixed. Let's talk about it. Let's dive into this debate real quick for the next few minutes, because I think there are some points to be made on both sides. ESPN's Game Day flashed up a graphic Saturday. It showed that the top 6 teams in each conference, the SEC and the Pac-12, the SEC would be favored in all 6 of those matchups, and I think that is telling because you're talking about the top teams. I'll just go ahead and read you the top standings in the Pac-12. You've got Oregon and UCLA right now sitting on top. The SEC, of course, Missouri and Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, Georgia hanging in there, LSU still with 1 loss, Auburn with a loss. I think we saw earlier this year Auburn play Washington State, 2 teams that were dismal last year, and Auburn won that game, albeit it was in Auburn. But I still think the SEC has a slight edge on the Pac-12. I get the debate, but I still go with the Southeastern Conference. How about you?
I would, too, right now, especially with the way you're starting to see more depth develop at the bottom of the conference. Yes, they are still pretty much very top-heavy. You have Alabama, LSU, Texas A&M, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina as your elite. Missouri's trying to get in there now with everything that's coming in on their behalf. And then, of course, you have some of the underlings like that are starting to develop, like Ole Miss, like Vanderbilt. Tennessee looks much improved from last year. Don't necessarily know if their record will show it this year, but they look like a much better team this year. But when you go over to the Pac-12, you have the Cals, the abysmal Colorado Buffaloes. Arizona's just not playing well. You have a lot of more bottom feeders there. I think you have your elite there with Oregon and UCLA, but I think you have more middle-of-the-pack schools with your Oregon States, your Arizona States. USC looks much improved after 1 week with Orgeron, but I think there's not as many dominant teams in the Pac-12 as you have in the SEC.
Yeah, you're not going to convince me that a 5-1 Oregon State team could compete. Well, they could compete with, but could beat, knock off a 5-1 South Carolina team, a 5-1 LSU team, especially not a 5-1 Texas A&M team. Any of those teams on a neutral site, I think the SEC would be in all of them. There's, you're talking about Oregon State. There's Stanford, of course. We know they're very vulnerable, and SEC teams are as well. But the SEC this year is going to be a victim, and you've already seen this to some degree, of really just cannibalizing itself. The SEC is very good. They're very competitive from top to bottom, and the SEC is beating the SEC. We saw it with Georgia and LSU. We've seen it with LSU and Florida last week, Alabama and Texas A&M, Missouri and Georgia. It's a league that's eating its own, and I think that's the problem for the SEC. Now, you could argue that the Pac-12 is doing the same thing with Stanford and Utah, but I still think the SEC is still in charge until somebody proves otherwise. And if Alabama and Oregon run the table, we will get a chance to see mano a mano which team's bell cow can take home the crown at the end of the year.
Well, you also have to remember that Utah was 0-2 in conference play coming into that game against Stanford. Stanford was 3-0 coming into that game, looking to go to 4-0, keep the pressure on Oregon. And Utah, who was 0-2 in conference, was able to go and get the upset there in Stanford. They're probably going to have to suffer, or they'll probably suffer a letdown game this week as the smaller schools that upset the bigger ones do. It's their first victory over a top five opponent since they upset Alabama in 2008, so that is a very big win for them. But this week they go to Arizona, and it's a very, very likely outcome that they'll lose to Arizona just because they're not able to carry the momentum of that big win. If they do manage to beat Arizona, it'll be quite shocking to me.
And the Pac-12 currently plays 9 conference games, and the SEC at the moment plays 8, although most think in a couple of years that will change. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. All right, let's shift gears now for a few minutes, Sears, and let's talk about first Mack Brown. His team wins 36-20 over Oklahoma. Surprising to some, although a lot of people had a feeling it would be closer than expected, but I don't think anybody thought Texas A&M would whip Oklahoma on the interior lines like they did all day long. Does this save Mack Brown's job?
I don't think it saved Mack Brown's job. I mean, it's a nice win for Mack Brown, but that program is stale and stagnant. You look at Texas right now, they really don't seem to have a clear vision of the future. They're stuck in second gear, and they can't really get out. And, yeah, they're 3-0 in the Big 12, but, I mean, they still have to play Baylor at the end of the year. They still get to play Texas Tech. And then they still have a suddenly more difficult game with West Virginia at West Virginia. So, also, I mean, they're good. They're a good team, but I don't think they're what Texas fans want. Texas fans have not been to a BCS bowl since they played Alabama in 2009.
And how devastating!
They were in the national championship game, and the sack by Eric Anders that forced the fumble of Garrett Gilbert, allowing Mark Ingram to score the touchdown, put Alabama up 2 scores. That was the closest Texas had come to being relevant. And since that game, they just have not been anywhere near that form. And they've been able to be in a conference that, despite what Bob Stoops championed, is a very middle-of-the-road conference. There's really no dominant team. They still haven't had a top-10 team at any point this year from that conference. So it's one of those things where you look at the Big 12. Texas should be dominating that. You're in the biggest recruiting bag. More talented than there is in the state of Florida. You're still missing on people. You wanted to make Johnny Manziel a safety. You want to make Robert Griffin a safety. you didn't want to really put them in the quarterback position, and you missed out on 2 big ones there. So I think Texas probably can finish with 8 or 9 wins, but I still think that's a stretch to finish the season 6-0 or 5-1. But I mean, I still can see at least that loss to Baylor at Baylor, that game I think could be a very ugly, ugly matchup for Texas, especially the way Baylor plays. Mack Brown, he needs to go. He's stagnant. That program is just not stepping forward the way it needs to be. And with the lost Dodd stepping down, I can see it kind of a grand coup as everybody going down at the same time, because if Matt Brown doesn't leave and go to the athletic director's role, then you're going to have a new athletic director inherit a huge mess with that football program. And we all know Texas football is the lifeblood of that university.
Other scores from the weekend. LSU beat Florida 17-6 in Tiger Stadium. I thought Florida would have a little bit of offense in that game. Apparently, the offense did not get off the bus. Texas A&M, is there anyone more clutch in sports right now other than Johnny Manziel and perhaps Tom Brady and David Ortiz? But Johnny Manziel continues to impress me with the way he can lead his team back from seemingly any deficit or scenario.
That game was very impressive to watch. You've pretty much figured the team that could get the first defensive stop would win. Texas A&M was able to do that, get the ball back, and just run out the clock. You have to kind of question Hugh Freeze there. Three passes, only burning 38 seconds of total game time, and you give the ball back to Johnny Football with about 3 minutes left. Your defense has not been able to stop him at all in the second half. You have to question the play calling there of Hugh Freeze. Johnny Football is an amazing football player. He's definitely showing why he is a top 20 NFL pick. I know a lot of people don't like his size, but I say look at Russell Wilson, what he's been able to do in Seattle. Johnny Football is a guy that will be able to be a game changer, someone that will affect completely an NFL team and turn them around. So I think he is a very clutch player. I don't think he's the most clutch football player in the NCAA. I think that goes to A.J. McCarron. I know I sound like the homer there.
That's
a
shock,
AJ's track record.
All tied.
And I know. You have to look at A.J.'s track record and his ability to come back in games. I mean, I think he shed that game manager label pretty much to show that he is the all-around quarterback. But I definitely have A.J. and Johnny Football up there, 1A and 1B.
Wisconsin beat Northwestern 35-6. Michigan fell to Penn State in a very thrilling ending there in several overtimes, 43-40. Clemson had a little bit of trouble early with Boston College, but ended up getting the win 24-14. As we mentioned, Missouri all over Georgia, 41-26 in that one. Also, I found this one interesting, Baylor at Kansas State, and Baylor seemed to struggle with Kansas State, and a lot of people want to talk about Baylor potentially winning the Big 12, but this Baylor team seems a little vulnerable to me.
Baylor is a good team. They got their first real taste of a defense. They haven't really played anybody there. They'll still probably be undefeated rolling into that Oklahoma game. Baylor's offense is a very complex offense with Art Briles, but I think he's going to be able to get the ship righted. I really think Baylor rolling into their next 2 weeks, I think they have Kansas and they have Iowa State at home, and then they go to Kansas the week after. So Iowa State has shown they can be difficult at home. I don't really think they can transition to being a difficult team on the road. But that Kansas game should just be a bloodbath because Kansas is just not that good a football team. So that Thursday night showdown on November 7th with Oklahoma ought to be a great one. They're going to have two great football games that night with Oklahoma, Baylor, and then Stanford and Oregon. So that weekend is shaping up to be quite the movement Saturday.
It's still going to be great, but it was epic before this past weekend happened. But with Oklahoma losing, with Baylor getting a scare, and then, of course, with Stanford losing, that Thursday night did take a little bit of a hit. But still, it's going to be, no doubt, the best Thursday night of the year. And we'll end with South Carolina 52-7 over Arkansas. The Jadeveon Clowney drama has seemingly quieted down for the moment. But South Carolina looking very impressive against Arkansas. And this is a team people should not forget about in the East. They have Tennessee this week in Knoxville, and they're traveling to Columbia. No, not their Columbia, the one in Missouri, to play the Tigers in 2 weeks, which I think will be a very pivotal game in the SEC East. But the East is up for grabs right now, and I think South Carolina and Florida are very much in it.
It is very much up for grabs right now. If Georgia can get Marshall back, they should be able to get that offense shaped up a little bit better. The SEC East right now, you've got Missouri, who's undefeated, and then you have 3-1 in conference, Florida 3-1 in conference, South Carolina and 3-1 in conference, Georgia. So it's very much wide open. We could see a three-way tie possibly. We could see someone who's not even a factor right now just come in there. South Carolina probably has the easiest road. They only have a really challenge left of Florida. They get state from the West, and then Missouri. So Missouri and Florida will be difficult for South Carolina, but they've got the easiest path there. Florida still has a couple of tough things left ahead of them, and unless Murphy can develop better as a quarterback, I think they'll struggle and not exactly win out. Part of that, though, with his struggle with LSU is LSU's defense is starting to click, and we all know John Chavis is one of the better defensive coordinators in the SEC. Georgia, I think the injuries are finally starting to catch up with them. If they were able to stay healthy, I think I'd give them a chance, but Aaron Murray just had so many injuries at his key positions that he's having to do so much more than he's been able to. But right now, the driver's seat, I would probably say South Carolina does have the driver's seat for the SEC East, unless James Franklin can get some Wolverine healing abilities for that separated shoulder. I think they're going to go down at least one of these next two games, if not both.
Well, we will be here on the Bun Sports Show to chronicle it all. David Sears every Monday with us to recap what happens in the world of college football, and it was almost one of those seminal weekends where you have many upsets, but it didn't quite happen. We had one or two, but not quite the epic number. But I think that's coming. I think as October progresses and we dip into November, you're going to see some of these major teams go down. Alabama and Oregon seem to be running things right now, but I think that that will change at some point. I think both of them are vulnerable and could go down, and we could see a number of undefeated teams go down by the end of the year. But we'll know one will go down this week because Clemson and Florida State play, and that's going to be an epic contest. Great to have you on. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to leave you with one stat.
Sure.
Outside of the Texas A&M game, Alabama has given up 26 points total. A lot of people are saying Alabama's defense is not as good as it used to be. I strongly disagree with that. Look at how they've dominated the competition. They've got a good chance to dominate again against a team that's very similar to Alabama with Arkansas. So watch out for Alabama's defense. They look like that young defense is finally starting to get their act together. And we could have a very much a rematch of the a replay of the 9-6 showdown in Tuscaloosa.
Could be.
Come November 9th.
Could be.
That Alabama defense is much improved. LSU's defense is much improved. Watch out. That could be another very low-scoring game.
I think you're right about that. I agree. I thought LSU's looked much improved, of course, against the bad Florida offense and all considered. And I agree with you about Alabama. And along that line, you talked about that stat there. I believe 34% of the yards that Alabama has given up this season have come from Johnny Manziel. That's very significant. 34% of the yards that Alabama has given up all season came from one Johnny Manziel. So Alabama's defense holding everybody else, or limiting everybody else. And we'll see if LSU can do the same at the end of the year. Well, Sears, great to have you on, as always, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Bun.
We'll be back later in the week to talk about the other subjects in college football, but I hope you have a good weekend as we look forward to Week 8 in the college football season.